Good morning and welcome to Wanda's Picks, a Black arts and culture program of the African Sisters Media Network. We are continuing our coverage of the 56th annual San Francisco International Film Festival with a conversation with director Kalyani Mam, whose film, A River Changes Course, has another screening this Sunday, May 5th at 1 o'clock at New People. And she is a Bay Area filmmaker who's presenting an intimate and moving portrait of the vanishing world of rural farmers and fishermen in Cambodia, focusing on three families in vivid cinema verite style. Kalyani Mam reveals how the encroaching modern world is destroying the rich and sustaining cultures of the past and forcing the young to seek work in factories or plantations. The film is in the Cambodian language and with English subtitles. It's about 83 minutes, and it's also a Golden Gate Award documentary feature contender. Kalyani Mam was born in Battambang, Cambodia, during the Khmer Rouge regime. In 1979, she and her family fled the refugee camps at the Thai-Cambodian border and eventually immigrated to the United States. Even to this day, her mother recounts stories of their flight. Kalyani's father walked ahead of the family to protect them from landmines. They slept on pieces of plastic laid across the wet jungle floor, while constantly evading soldiers pursuing them along the way. These stories and many others inspired Kalyani to return to her native homeland for the first time in 1998 during the summer of her junior year at Yale. And they continue to inspire her, these stories, that is, to make films about atrocities occurring in Cambodia even today. But she was not always a filmmaker. After graduating from UCLA Law School, she worked as a legal consultant in Mozambique and Iraq. In Mozambique, she discovered a passion for photography. In Iraq, she discovered a passion for advocacy on important contemporary issues. These two passions enabled her to direct, produce, and shoot her first documentary short, Between Earth and Sky, co-directed by David Mendez, who was also a composer on A River Changes Course. Eventually, Kalyani's passion for photography and filmmaking now led her to work as cinematographer, associate producer, and researcher on the Oscar-winning documentary Inside Job with director Charles Ferguson. Kalyani hopes to continue to combine her passion for art and advocacy to tell both compelling and universal stories. So we're going to open with some music, and then we will shift right into this wonderful interview that I'm sure you're going to really enjoy. I'm going to play something from Ladysmith Black Mbazo, and it's got a little conversation before. It's from their current CD.
Sanbonani. That's a greeting in our language, isiZulu, meaning hello. The response is yebo. Sanbonani. Beautiful. We thank you all for coming to our show this evening. Ladysmith Black Mbazo was formed 51 years ago by our leader, Professor B.J. Mshengu Shabalala. And our mission has been to spread our culture, the culture of South Africa, of love, peace, and harmony throughout the world. Your being here this evening continues this journey. We thank you very much. This next song is called Yang Ilumingkuku. It's about a naughty little chicken who won't let us do our work on the farm. This little chicken keeps biting our feet, our ankles, and our legs. Sometimes we get fed up with this little chicken. We wanted to kill it and eat it, making some buffalo wings with it. But some of us have said, no, it's too small, it won't be enough for the rest of us, so we let it leave. Here's the song, Yang Ilumi Nkukhu.
Yang Ilumi Nkukhu.
Yang Iluma, Yang Ilumi Nkukhu. Yang Iluma, Salawu Nkwashi Sabeti. Yang Iluma, Nkukhu Nama Sinu. Yang Ilumi Nkukhu. Yang Iluma, Salawu Nkwashi Sabeti. Yang Iluma, Nkukhu Nama Sinu.
Ibonile iluma abantwana bo
ihlela nasekse ijabulela ukukhanya kwelanga.
Ibonile iluma abantwana
ihlela nasekse ijabulela ukukhanya kwelanga. Njene madoda ngoba futhi yancelisa inobiso lomnandi. Njengoba nathi sakhula ngobisi, nayo beyikhulisa abantwana bayo ngobisi lwayo lumnandi. Ndijeni madoda, ndijeni madoda, mveze makasa lenkukhu. Ndijeni madoda,
inkukhu ihlele useni.
Ndijeni madoda,
ifunga amazinyo ayo.
Mveze makasa lenkukhu.
Amahle amhlophe.
Ndijeni madoda,
inkukhu ihlele useni.
Ndijeni madoda,
ifunga amazinyo ayo.
Mveze makasa lenkukhu.
Amahle amhlophe.
Ndijeni madoda,
inkukhu ihlele useni.
Ndijeni madoda,
inobiso lumnandi.
Mveze makasa lenkukhu.
Ikhulisa abantwana ayo.
Ndijeni madoda,
inkukhu ihlele useni.
Ndijeni madoda,
inobiso lumnandi.
Mveze makasa lenkukhu.
Ikhulisa abantwana ayo.
Ndijeni madoda,
inkukhu ihlele useni.
Ndijeni madoda,
ifunga amazinyo ayo.
Mveze makasa lenkukhu.
Amahle amhlophe.
Ndijeni madoda,
inkukhu ihlele useni.
Ndijeni madoda,
ifunga amazinyo ayo.
Mveze makasa lenkukhu.
Amahle amhlophe.
Ndijeni madoda,
inkukhu ihlele useni.
Ndijeni madoda,
inobiso lumnandi.
Mveze makasa lenkukhu.
Ikhulisa abantwana bayo.
Ndijeni madoda,
inkukhu ihlele useni.
Ndijeni madoda,
inobiso lumnandi.
Mveze makasa lenkukhu.
Ikhulisa abantwana bayo.
Ndijeni madoda,
inkukhu ihlele useni.
Ndijeni madoda,
ifunga amazinyo ayo.
Mveze makasa lenkukhu.
Amahle amhlophe.
Ndijeni madoda,
inkukhu ihlele useni.
Ndijeni madoda,
ifunga amazinyo ayo.
Mveze makasa lenkukhu.
Amahle amhlophe.
Ndijeni madoda,
inkukhu ihlele useni.
Ndijeni madoda,
inobiso lumnandi.
Mveze makasa lenkukhu.
Ikhulisa abantwana bayo.
Ndijeni madoda,
inkukhu ihlele useni.
Ndijeni madoda,
inobiso lumnandi.
Mveze makasa lenkukhu.
Ikhulisa abantwana bayo.
Ndijeni madoda,
inkukhu ihlele useni.
Ndijeni madoda,
ifunga amazinyo ayo.
Mveze makasa lenkukhu.
Iyo.
Ndijeni madoda,
inkukhu ihlele useni.
Ndijeni madoda,
ifunga amazinyo ayo.
Mveze makasa lenkukhu.
Amahle amhlophe.
Ndijeni madoda,
inkukhu ihlele useni.
Ndijeni madoda,
inobiso lumnandi.
Mveze makasa lenkukhu.
Iyo 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 iyo.
Ndijeni madoda,
inkukhu ihlele
useni. Ndijeni madoda,
inobiso lumnandi.
Mveze makasa lenkukhu.
Ikhulisa abantwana bayo.
Ndijeni madoda,
inkukhu ihlele useni.
Ndijeni madoda,
ifunga amazinyo ayo.
Mveze makasa lenkukhu.
Iyo iyo iyo.
Ndijeni madoda,
inkukhu ihlele useni.
Ndijeni madoda,
ifunga amazinyo ayo.
Mveze makasa lenkukhu.
Amahle amhlophe.
Ndijeni madoda,
inkukhu ihlele useni.
Ndijeni madoda,
ifunga amazinyo ayo.
Mveze makasa lenkukhu.
Ikhulisa abantwana bayo.
Ndijeni madoda,
inkukhu ihlele useni.
Ndijeni madoda,
ifunga amazinyo
ayo. Mveze makasa lenkukhu.
Ikhulisa abantwana bayo.
Ndijeni madoda,
inkukhu ihlele useni.
Ndijeni madoda,
ifunga amazinyo ayo.
Mveze makasa lenkukhu.
Iyo 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 ma.
Ndijeni madoda,
inkukhu ihlele useni.
Ndijeni madoda,
ifunga amazinyo ayo.
Mveze makasa lenkukhu.
Amahle amhlophe.
Pijeni Matoda.
Iko Mishare Useni.
Pijeni Matoda.
Isho Mama Zilua.
Kuzi Manga Salengo.
Ama Se Hamchoke, Ama Se Hamchoke, Ama Se Hamchoke.
Well, I just wanted to tell you, Kalyani, Mom?
Yeah.
that your film, A River Changes Course, is just so beautiful.
Thank you.
It's just really, really lovely. As long as you could tell us a little bit about your journey. You are a Cambodian refugee. I mean, your family escaped when you, I guess you were, were you born there or born here?
Yes, I was born in Cambodia, in Lhasamong, during the Khmer Rouge regime.
Yes.
And during the Khmer Rouge regime, so my family and I, we actually fled the country to the border of the Cambodia and Thailand. The refugee camps there, mm-hmm. and then after that we immigrated to the United States.
Right. Yeah. And just just in your bio, just reading about how your father walked ahead of the family to protect you from landmines. I'm like, oh my goodness.
Yes.
Yeah. You slept on pieces of plastic laid across the wet jungle floor.
Yes.
Well, how old were you?
So I was born in 1977, so when we fled the Khmer Rouge, that was in 1979.
Okay, so you were...
So I was only about 2 years old when we left.
Yeah.
So I was very young, and I had four other family members, four other brothers and sisters with me,
uh-huh.
and we all made that journey together across the jungles and through the jungles and to the border of Cambodia and Thailand. And it was very treacherous, and for not just for my family, but for all Cambodian families who were leaving the country, because there were landmines all over the place. So it was a very treacherous journey for us. But, there was no other choice. We needed to leave. We wanted to, seek refuge. And so we went to the border of Cambodia and Thailand. And then eventually we left the refugee camps and went to Houston, Texas. And that's where we first immigrated to,
Okay, and then is your family still in Houston or did you come to California?
No, we all came to California, but eventually my sister and her family moved to Dallas, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
So I still have some family in Texas. Most of my family is here in California.
Mm-hmm.
My mother is here. My father passed away over 10 years ago during my senior year of college. But my mother is still alive and she still, has memories of that time. And, what I wrote in the bio, was the story that she told me just last year, actually. I mean, she's told me many stories, but sometimes, we're sitting at the dinner table and all of a sudden something clicks in her mind and she starts telling these stories. And when she told me that story, I just, I didn't know how to react. I almost cried. But she was telling it so very matter-of-factly, as if it just happened yesterday. As if it was something that wasn't that important, but that's how it is for many Cambodian people, actually, who have left Cambodia and have immigrated to the United States or elsewhere abroad. They continue to live, and struggle with the memories of the past, and the ghosts, still haunt them. But I think, what we're trying to do now is move forward, move forward to the future and try to, build a future for ourselves. And I think this is what, I wanted to do with this film, with A River Changes Course, to show how that river is changing, the river of life,
right.
For the Cambodian people and how the Cambodian people continue, to persevere after the Khmer Rouge period and now continue to persevere amidst all the challenges that they're facing because of development, because of globalization, because the forests being cut down or they're being thrown off their land or, they are accruing massive debt. You know, I think that families, many families are struggling to survive now. And I think it's really important that we remind people of those struggles. Not remind, but actually reveal those struggles. Mm-hmm. I think so many people are, when they know of Cambodia, they know of, you know, the Khmer Rouge period, or they know of the Angkorian period, the grand, illustrious past. But very few people know what is happening in Cambodia right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what is happening now is just as atrocious, you know, just as terrible, I can say, you know, as even the Khmer Rouge of the past. And it's really important that we are aware of that and that we, you know, begin to do something about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so tell us about the characters that you follow in the film, the mother who talks about how eventually they're going to have to sell their land because the companies are buying it up, and if you're the only holdout, then you can't stay by yourself because people need other people to make community.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And then a lovely child, is his name Sari?
Yeah, Sari.
Yes, he is. Yeah, and I love it that you know, the filming took place over an extended length of time so that you could come back to him and remind him of something he said that he remembers. And I was wondering as I was watching it and seeing how hard the children work. I mean, little bitty kids with these machetes. And know how to use them. Like, and then how you start with this child digging for potatoes on this really steep incline.
Yes.
And they take care of their sisters and their brothers, and everybody is working together. And then the brother, the son who goes out, the one, sorry, how do you pronounce
it?
Out on the fishing boat with his dad, and there's no fish, and what that means for the family, and him talking about how, you know, he was able to finish school up to the seventh grade. Or the seventh form, but he's trying to make money so that his siblings can continue and finish school. And because I was wondering, like, okay, where are they? When are they going to school? When is school fitting in there? And then just the beautiful landscape, because people are living in floating cities. I mean, their floor is the water. It's really amazing. Yeah, so talk about the families, and then the family with the woman whose daughter. Has to go work in the city to help pay for the debt, but then the mother, she seems to be all alone, and so she's kind of torn, like, do I let my daughter go, or do I let her, ask her to come back? And then I was wondering about some of the practices, the coining. I didn't quite get that.
Yes, a lot of people wonder about that. I know there's so much to talk about, and I mean, actually, the way you described it, you know, is really perfect. You know, you really described the families well. You know, I think that there are some themes that are, you know, very present in all those three stories that, you know, I think are connected to all of us. You know, it's not just these families, but, you know, I think these themes run through our lives as well. You know, it's not just happening in Cambodia, actually. I mean, the idea of, you know, struggling to preserve your land and to preserve what is meaningful to you, I think we, all of us, you know, can connect with that. A lot of people in Cambodia are struggling to maintain their home, you know, from foreclosure or, you know, trying to pay off their mortgages and, you know, trying to, and then the family that, you know, the daughter who goes and, you know, and leaves and to work in the factories to pay off the family's debt. I mean, I think a lot of our families in the United States can relate to that as well. You know, as we're struggling to pay off our, you know, debts and student loans and, you know, our car payments, our rent, you know, all the things that kind of tie us down. And then, you know, the boy story, you know, of children who are working to provide for their families. You know, this is a struggle that, you know, we don't really see in the United States, but this is happening, you know, all over the world, you know, where kids are, you know, forced to labor and to sacrifice their education, you know, for the sake of their families.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what is really, you know, and the word sacrifice comes to my mind when I think of these three stories, with these families, they're really sacrificing, you know, for each other. You know, the daughter for the mother, the mother for her children, you know, the son, you know, for his family and his parents. you know, all of them are struggling to sacrifice, you know, and provide for their families. And I think those are themes that all of us, you know, can relate to. But, you know, with these families, it's, you know, much more even extreme than, you know, what we are experiencing here. And, you know, one of the things actually that you, and you raise an interesting point with the kids, you know, chopping with a machete. You know, that first scene when you see the kid, you know, chopping the sugar cane with a machete,
mm-hmm.
you know, a little girl, you know, she's just chopping away, and you just, wow, you're stunned. You can't believe a child is doing that. And then throughout the film, you see small children, you know, chopping and working, you know, to provide for their families. And this is something that you don't see in the United States or, you know, in the industrialized world. But it's something that I actually found when I was there. I found it quite beautiful, you know, how connected the families were to each other,
mm-hmm.
you know, how interrelated and interconnected they were, and how, you know, you would never see a 14-year-old boy saying, you know, I would do anything to, if I could, just go to school so that I can, you know, work so that I can provide for my parents and buy them land.
Mm-hmm.
No 14-year-old child in the United States would ever say such a thing. And no, you know, young 9-year-old girl would ever hold a machete and chop sugar cane. You know, it's kind of a very different reality from what we know.
Mm-hmm.
And those things I found really touching. And I think that's something that we can learn from. Not that I want to encourage child labor or that I want to encourage, you know, children to sacrifice their lives for their parents.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's something beautiful about being giving, you know, about sharing your life and not being so selfish.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something that we can learn a lot from. But at the same time, I do think that, you know, people in Cambodia need to be aware that education is more important, you know, for the child, and that we need to provide opportunities, you know, for children to go to school and not, you know, force them to labor in order to, you know, provide for their families. And
mm-hmm. yeah, and then the children they see the importance of education as the only saving grace in the developing world. Because
yeah.
The child, you know, Sare, who we keep on mentioning,
mm-hmm.
he says that, you know, he envisioned himself, if he could finish, you know, high school, then he wouldn't see himself as a fisherman for the rest of his life. But if he had
yeah.
no education, there would be no way to change the course of his life. It would
mm-hmm.
it wouldn't, the river would not change course. It would just
mm-hmm.
follow its way out. And then the father was saying, they're a Muslim family, and the father was saying that, you know, he didn't want to do this, but he had to send his son to work in the cassava, on a cassava
yes.
plantation. And
mm-hmm.
the boy
mm-hmm.
says it's like being a slave.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
You know, to the owners of the plantation who happen to be Chinese.
Yes.
And it's like, wow, China owns everything. They own the United States. They own their own, buying up the land.
Yeah.
I mean, when
yeah.
I was in Madagascar, they uh-huh. build roads, and they're in Africa taking over the textiles. Like, what is this?
Yes.
Oh, my
no,
goodness.
True.
It's like
true
globalization
mm-hmm.
and its
mm-hmm.
impact.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's really true. You know, I think that, you know, I didn't want to make any kind of statement, you know, with these stories. I wanted to just, you know, have the story speak for themselves.
That's okay, I see.
But it's obvious, you know, it's obvious that statements are made, you know, that that there are inferences that we can infer, you know, from what they say and, you know, what they're going through. And it's true, you know, I think that the Chinese are, you know, in Cambodia as well as all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I think that it's very easy to blame other people, and it's more difficult to look at yourself and look at, you know, and how, what you are doing. And I think that the Cambodian government has a lot to do, you know, to help their own people,
mm-hmm.
you know, and to make sure that, you know, they are living lives that are, that have opportunities, you know, but are not, you know, being exploited. So there's a lot of things that the Cambodian government can do to ensure that companies don't come, you know, and cut down all the forests, and companies don't come and tear and remove all the land, you know, from the
mm-hmm.
people.
Right.
There's a lot of things that can be done. And, you know, with the film, there's that moment, you know, when Q, the young woman who leaves the countryside to go to the factory, you know, to pay off the debts for her family, there's a moment when she says, you know, I feel like my life is divided in half. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm neither, you know, in the country with my family or in the factories, you know, working. And, you know, it's true. She is divided in half. And then there's another moment where she says, I wish the factory had come to my village.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and for her, you know, a lot of people are shocked when they hear that, you know, when they're, why would she say such a thing? But, you know, it's really understandable that she would say such a thing, because for her, that's the only way that she can bring her two lives together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that she's no longer divided in half, you know, that she, you know, is no longer separated, you know, from the countryside and separated from her village and her home. And, you know, when she's in the village, she's not separated from the factories where she can find work and opportunity. You know, this is a way for her to have the best of both worlds. Of course, you know, she doesn't understand the consequences of her statement. You know, she doesn't understand the consequences of what would happen mm-hmm. if the factory did come to her village. But, you know, I think that many of us here in the U.S. and in the industrialized world, we also don't understand the full consequences of all our actions, our everyday actions. You know, every time we turn on the light, every time we drive our car, you know, every time we consume, you know, masses and masses of material things, you know, what kind of impact we are having on the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so I think in a way that she represents many of us, you know, and our situation right now, you know, that we are in a very delicate place. And sometimes, you know, we all lose perspective because of our desires, because of what we do want.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing wrong with wanting and wanting to live a good and life with dignity and respect. There's nothing wrong with that. I think all of us, you know, should be entitled to that, you know. And I think Q also deserves to have electricity in her home, as mm-hmm. deserves to have light, you know, deserves to have to live, you know, near her family or close to her family, just like all of us, you know. But I think that what she's expressing, you know, is something that I think we all need to consider, and then, you know, also understand that how can we do this? How can we make it possible for her to live a life of dignity,
mm-hmm.
but also make it sustainable so that we don't destroy the planet that we live in?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because Kyo times 5 billion people, it's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure, you know, what we can, well, you know, I mean, I think that there, I don't lose hope. People always ask me, what, mm-hmm. you know, do you, are you still hopeful? And I say, yes, of course I am. If I wasn't hopeful, I wouldn't have worked on this documentary. I wouldn't continue to do the work that I do.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there are answers. I think that there are answers that are, can help us, you know, to live and to maintain a sustainable life. We just need to find them, you know, find those solutions together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You tell us a little bit more about Sav, or is it Sav?
Yeah,
because, you know, her family, when you talk about electricity, you know, you see her husband weaving, you know, baskets all day. The sun goes down, and then he's sitting mm-hmm. by the, you know, the candle, continuing mm-hmm. to weave the baskets as, he,
yes.
as they listen to the radio. And they just seem like the work, you know, I mean, it doesn't seem like this, like, work is just a part of their life. It's part of that rhythm, you know.
Mm-hmm.
She nurses
yeah.
her baby.
Yeah.
She puts mm-hmm. the baby down, takes a nap. You know,
yeah.
you know, it's like work and play. They kind of all go together. And
mm-hmm,
are
mm-hmm.
they the family that has the threshing machine for the rice? Because they raise.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, that was a really good use. Because I was looking, you know, noticing how, you know, you show us the families that don't have that machine, and so they have to do
mm-hmm,
it by
mm-hmm.
hand, and
yes.
that takes a long time.
I know.
My goodness. Yeah.
I know.
Right.
Yeah, they have a mill. They actually bought the rice mill
mm-hmm.
to mill the grain, and but I. It's so amazing. You really watch the film with such attention. because I think that's a really good point, you know, to raise, you know, about the rhythm of life.
Mm-hmm.
And all of these families, they live, you know, when they're living in the jungle, they're living, you know, in the on the lake, you know, on the water. They have a rhythm of life that they, and every day, you know, it's a rhythm of fishing, a rhythm of planting, a rhythm of threshing, a rhythm of harvesting, you know, then of weaving the baskets. It's all part of their life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's such a beautiful thing, you know, to observe that. And it makes me, you know, it's something that I really admire, and I think it's very beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me sad that it's something that can be lost.
Simone tells us eventually all of the forest is going to be gone, and then the old people, you know, they tremble with the idea that this is going to happen. So what does that mean about, you know, for their lives? And so we're already hearing predictions about, you know, no more fish. So then what are they going to eat? And then you connect the diet and wellness to that, because I'm not certain which family says that they get sick more now than in the past, because they're not eating their own food, they're eating other people's food.
And
so is it the water, or is it the food, or is it a combination, is the question. And you show them, you know, sort of taking the, you talk about the palm trees.
Yeah, palm leaves.
Yeah, palm leaves. That is so pretty. And how they talk about how all of it's really useful, you know, the leaves are for this, and the bark is for that, and the fruit, of course, is for this. Yeah, because palm fruit is really wonderful.
Staple.
It doesn't have any cholesterol.
And then
you have the palm wine. It's good.
Yes.
If you want to get drunk.
You know about all of this.
Oh yeah.
No. What you are raising, it's incredible. It really, these are all the things that I see in the film. This is what I wanted to share, you know, with everyone. But no one has really brought this up yet, and I'm so happy that you did, because, you know, all of those scenes that you're talking about, him weaving the basket, you know, the palm leaves, her weaving the palm leaves, and, you know, everything that they're doing, they're living a very a rhythmic life, but also a sustainable life. You know, these are all products that are part of the environment that they live in. You know, the way that they live is very natural, you know, to the environment. There's no destruction. There's no, you know, everything is like part of the rhythm, you know, part of the pattern of life. There's a harmony.
Yes.
And what's happening right now is that their life is being disrupted, you know, by outside forces. Mm-hmm. And that disruption is going to change that way of life. They may not use palm. You know, actually, they're already beginning to stop using palm sugar.
Mm.
You know, they're using just regular sugar now, white sugar, because it's cheaper, it's less expensive than palm sugar. You know, and pretty soon he's going to stop weaving the baskets because it's going to be cheaper for him to just buy the basket.
Mm.
And he's one of the few who are still weaving his own baskets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people are just buying baskets now because it's easier.
Yeah.
You know, and pretty soon they're not going to be able to, you know, fish anymore, because there's not going to be any fish in the river.
Mm-hmm.
So their way of life is being impacted, and that natural course of life, you know, is really going to change, you know, forever, you know, the next few years. And, you know, like I said before, it's not that I'm against development or I'm against change. I think all of these things are inevitable.
Mm-hmm.
I think our lives have changed, you know, over the years. You know, the history of our country has changed over the years, and those things are inevitable. Change will happen. But I think the question, again, that, you know, we need to pose is, how do we work with that change? You know, how can we fashion the kind of change that we want? And I think we can.
Yeah.
But it's going to take some effort.
Mhm. Yeah. So how did the subjects in the film, what do they think of it?
Oh, they love it. Yeah, it's amazing. We went back to, as soon as the film was done, we flew to Cambodia.
Mhm.
and showed them the film, and they just they couldn't believe it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
They couldn't believe that this was them, you know, on the screen. Mm-hmm. It was our first time seeing the film, and we showed it in a theater, the largest theater in Phnom Penh.
Mm-hmm.
There were 600 people there,
mm.
and 200 of them were parents of garment factory workers.
Oh, my.
Yeah, who had come in from the villages to see the film.
Mm.
And all three of the families came, even the one from the jungle.
Oh, good.
That was, yeah, it was a long trek for them, their first time in the capital city, the first time outside their province.
Wow.
You know, their first time in the city at all. And their first time watching a movie.
Really?
Let alone a movie about themselves.
Amazing. Wow.
That
was really big. So how did they get there? Well, they probably took one of those...
we went to get them.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, we went to get them.
Because I noticed that they had a little motorcycle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but that wasn't enough for the whole family to fit on. Oh, that's nice. So you rented a bus and you went and picked up people?
Yeah, you know, we had a car to pick up the people in the jungle,
mm-hmm.
and then we had a van pick up the family on the lake.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and then the other family came in as well. So
mm-hmm.
yeah, all of them were there.
Oh, that's great. So has anyone in the government seen the film?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, good. Are some changes going to happen?
I know it's pretty amazing because the government of Cambodia, you know, gave us a license to mm-hmm. film and also a license to screen the film across the country,
mm.
which is very unusual. You know, this has never been granted before to any other documentary. So we feel very fortunate, you know, to have that opportunity.
Nice, nice.
Yeah.
Because what I really like, how many years did you work on this film? 3, 4?
Well, we started out in 2008 with the idea. I came up with the idea in 2008.
Mm-hmm.
And then I couldn't really start production until 2010.
Okay.
After I finished working on my last film, Inside Job,
mm-hmm.
Which is about the global financial crisis. I was cinematographer and associate producer for that.
Inside Job.
And Inside Job.
Okay.
And then so I flew directly from the Cannes Film Festival. to Cambodia
mm-hmm.
and just started shooting in 2010.
Okay. Oh, so not too long. It just seems like you've been there forever because
it's
a rhythm to it. It sounds really timeless.
Yeah.
It feels really timeless.
No, it definitely was forever.
And you talked about how you had to put your film in a can to keep it from melting?
No.
Something?
I had to put the camera the camera in a tin box.
Okay, keep it from getting wet, I think.
To keep it from getting wet.
Mm-hmm. But you all were melting because it was warm.
Yeah, I know, we were melting. and then, you know, we had to cross a river, climb, and we packed 9 motorcycles with our equipment and our... rations, you know, our food and our water. We had to take water with us too,
mm-hmm.
as well as a generator,
mm.
So that we could have electricity, so that I could, you know, input, you know, download all the footage
mm-hmm.
and put it on our hard drive.
Mm.
So we had to take electricity with us into the jungle.
So you all were, you know, quite the event, huh?
Yeah. No, it was.
I meant for the community because, you know, people probably had never experienced. So they were watching you like you were watching.
But you know, after a while,
mm-hmm.
they got used to us being there, and you know, we just became part of everything.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't that exciting anymore, and you know, and that was great. You know, that's when we became part of the family. You know, that's
right.
when we, you know, just kind of blended into the environment,
mm-hmm.
and you know, that's what I really love. You know, just being able to, you know, I guess be embedded, you know, with the family,
mm-hmm. right?
And just experience their lives, you know,
mm-hmm.
firsthand.
Mhm. Yeah. One can tell how you know you gain the trust of your subjects, and so that they didn't feel you just sort of disappeared, and we didn't necessarily feel your presence. It feels, the rhythm feels really natural. It doesn't seem as if you interrupted anything.
Yeah,
which is good, and then in the end, I'm really surprised when you when you're in the film, your voice anyway. because that is your voice, right? Having the conversation.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, yeah. I'm surprised because you know, I mean, you're not there.
Mm-hmm.
but I mean, I'm glad you do have the conversation. You know, we hear your voice, and I'm glad that even though Sari doesn't want to respond to your question, you show the footage, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really wonderful ending. I like the way it ends. It's really nice. It's like a journey.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's very nice. I mean, the end is still a journey. It's not over.
Mm.
So.
Yeah, it was really important for me to not be present.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You know, and not have my presence known or anybody's presence known and nor narration,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I really wanted the family to tell their own stories
mm-hmm.
because they can. You know, I think that they're completely capable of telling their own stories, and mm-hmm. their own stories need to be known. It has to come from them. It has to come from their own voice.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the last few years, you know, since the Khmer Rouge period, you know, very few Cambodian people have been able to tell their own stories.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's always been told by foreigners,
yeah.
by, you know, the international people who, you know, organizations and, you know, people who think that they know more about Cambodia than Cambodian themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also, you know, Cambodian-American, and I can never say that I know, you know, more about their lives than they do. So it was really important, you know, for me to have, for them to have a chance, you know, to, you know, to tell their own story. And I think that that has to be, you know, there's a movement now, I think, you know, with documentary films where I think people are beginning to tell their own stories again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's really great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you are, you know, you're still an insider, even if, I mean, that's, you know, there's the blood memory there, you know?
Mm-hmm. No, I feel very privileged. You know, I feel so fortunate for that, that they gave me the opportunity, you know, to spend their lives with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because that's essentially what I did. And I don't think that would have been possible if I didn't have, you know, the cultural and background and the language skills, you
mm-hmm.
know. Or if I didn't have the motivation to eat everything that they gave me,
uh-huh.
you know, I think it was the fact that I ate everything that they gave me, that
uh-huh.
they were so nice to me. You know, I basically, and this is the path to my person's heart.
Mm.
You know, a Cambodian person's heart is through food.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you want to show that you love somebody, you have to eat their food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So what did you eat?
Oh, God. You saw the movie. It's so good. Everything.
Mm.
You know, on the lake, we ate, you know, the fish.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the jungles, I mean, we ate all the fresh, you know, the potatoes. You know that scene?
Mm, yes.
The potato.
The little girls are taking
the
line of, yeah, these are all my potatoes, she says to her little sister.
But, you know, when she brings the potato home
mm-hmm.
and they cook it over the fire
mm-hmm.
and, you know, she places the bananas on top
mm.
and then she covers it up. And so I was filming this whole thing and this whole time, and then all of a sudden they take it out, it's done,
mm-hmm.
and they put it on the plate, they peel the potatoes, they put it on the plate, and she, the mother, you know, stabs some more, and she takes some sugar and she pours it onto a little plate, and I watched them eating it together, and I'm just salivating, you know, I'm like filming it and salivating, and then all of a sudden, like 5 minutes later, I said, forget it. Stop. I need to stop filming. You know, this is too much. This is torture. And then I ate with them. And that's how it always was. I would film them for like 5 minutes and then I would eat with them.
Nice.
Because I couldn't resist. And those potatoes mm-hmm. were really definitely the best potatoes I've ever had.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so delicious. You know, straight from the ground. Everything
yeah.
is
mm-hmm.
delicious.
Yeah. Wow, nice. So are they like sweet potatoes or?
No, they're regular potatoes.
Like potato.
They do have some sweet potatoes too, but yeah, regular potatoes, but so sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, really delicious.
Nice.
And then the bananas, when they roast it, it's just divine.
Mm.
Yeah, really divine.
Oh, that's lovely.
I know, we're making us hungry now.
Yeah. So I have a couple of more questions.
Okay.
And so I was wondering, I wanted to mention that I really appreciate when the daughter, what's the daughter's name who has to go into work in the factory?
Kale,
yeah. When she, first she doesn't even know how to sew, but she takes a crash course and learns how to sew. And I really like that you talk to other women who've been working in the factories longer, and I guess they all come from the village and they all work in factories and do this piecework, and they find that life is real expensive in the city, and so they don't have that much money to be able to send home because everything costs so much. And then when they talk about how, you know, they want to go back home and tend the cows and, you know, farm. I mean, they love the life that they have, and people think, well, you know, the city is the life, and it's like, no, it's not.
Mm-hmm,
you know, these
mm-hmm.
women appreciate it and love the life that they had, but the reason why they're in the city is because they couldn't support the family, needed them to go out and send money home.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I really, that's a different kind of take. You know, people think the city is all that, and it really isn't.
Yeah,
that's really lovely. And then the question I have for you is, I think, were you an attorney first? Like, you went to UCLA Law School.
Yeah.
You worked as a legal consultant in Mozambique and Iraq, and then you made films in both those places. Yeah, so is that what happened? You know, so your legal career sort of took you on the path to become a director?
Yeah, so I worked as a lawyer. I was at UCLA Law School, and then after I graduated, I went to work as a legal consultant in Mozambique, and then as a legal consultant in Iraq, working with the Ministry of Justice there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was my time in Iraq that connected me with the Iraqi people, you know, and I came to really love them. I really completely adored them. One of the most beautiful, you know, kind, generous people I've ever met in my life. And when I left Iraq and I came back home, I felt really terrible. You know, I don't know if you ever had the experience of leaving your friends behind in a dangerous place, but it's not a great feeling. You know, I feel that, you know, life is so unfair, you know, where some people are more fortunate than others because of their passports. You know, because of their nationality and their citizenship. I don't think that is right. And so when I came back to the United States, I felt really terrible. And my partner and I, we decided, you know, we needed to do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
So we decided to work on a documentary about Iraqi refugees.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first time I ever held a camera, and the first time I ever made a documentary.
Mm-hmm.
But at that time, you know, many people asked me, well, how did you do that? I mean, how did you make that leap? I guess, you know, I just never thought about it. You know, I never thought about it too much. I just knew that this is something that I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that was important to me. And it didn't really matter whether or not I knew how to do it.
Uh-huh.
You know, what mattered to me was that I had to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was no choice. And I think when you're in a situation where you have no choice about something, it just forces you, you know, to make things happen, you know, and to learn. And so I've always been interested in photography, and I guess in a way I had the natural skill or the natural eye for it. But the technical part I quickly learned, you know, just by practice. Yeah, so I guess, you know, I feel that if you really want to do something, you know, if you feel inspired, you know, to do something, nothing should stand in your way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you feel that it's important enough to you. And eventually, you know, it is a struggle. It's not an easy path. I think that my path is probably, you know, one of the more difficult paths you'd want to travel because there's no financial incentive to take it. You know, it's definitely a struggle. But, you know, within that struggle, there's a lot of happiness, too. There's a lot of gain as well. You know, there's, you know, I would never have learned the things I've learned. I would never have met the people that I've met. I would never have told the stories I've told if, you know, I didn't take that leap.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Yeah. And your films, you know, from the beginning, have been getting awards, lots of them. And I noticed that, you know, David Mendez is, you know, I think he goes back. Does he go back to your first film?
Yes. Yeah. To the Iraqi film.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And other members of your team, like Chris Brown and.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So we had an amazing team working on the film. It's mm-hmm. just from beginning to end, you know, from the production to the post.
Mm-hmm.
Ratanat Ling was the producer on the film, and he, you know, was just by my side the whole time. Mm-hmm. He was holding the boom mic and, you know, helping with all the logistical stuff and, you know, and really living with us, you know, with the family.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we both, if it wasn't with him, without him, and then Ron, too, you know, who was with us through driving, and
mm-hmm.
you know, production would never have taken place. And then the Documentation Center of Cambodia and Yook Chang, the executive producer there, they really, you know, supported us the whole time. And the MacArthur Foundation, you know, funded the film,
mm-hmm.
And they really provided all the support, you know, to make the film possible.
Uh-huh.
You know, the film would not have been possible without their support.
Yeah, and you got the award at the Cannes Festival for Best Documentary, right?
No, that was Sundance.
Oh, the Sundance, for Best Documentary, uh-huh. right?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
That was
awesome.
For the World Cinema.
World Cinema.
It was a World Cinema Grand Jury Prize. Yeah,
that's
the Grand Jury Prize for World Cinema Documentary at Sundance.
Uh-huh. Nice.
And then recently, the Grand Jury Prize for Best Documentary Feature at Atlanta Film Festival,
mm-hmm.
as well as the Grand Jury Prize for Best Feature at the Environmental Film Festival at Yale.
Oh, yeah, and aren't you? Yeah.
And the Human Rights Award at River Bend Film Festival.
Really?
And then a Filmmaker Award at Full Frame Documentary Film Festival.
Hmm.
So
wow.
This is all very recent. It's, you know, it's all just been happening. And,
oh, nice.
Yeah, we feel really fortunate. I did never really expected all of this. You know, but, you know, it really is because of all the hard work that we put into it. And mm-hmm. I especially want to, you know, thank Chris Brown, our editor.
Mm-hmm.
He did an incredible job with editing. And you noticed, you know, with the editing.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing work.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a born storyteller. You know, he's a director himself, a filmmaker. He's working on, you know, films about, you know, about California, about young people living in California. And, you know, he's doing a lot of work himself, but he's a storyteller, you know, and when I was looking for an editor, I really wanted to find someone who could, you know, tell a good story.
Mm-hmm.
And Chris really did an amazing job with that. And then the sound, I don't know if you noticed the sound,
mm-hmm.
but Skywalker,
mm-hmm.
you know, did the sound, and Zach Martin did the mix and the editing, and Andy Yesen did the sound design, and she, they both did an incredible job with the sound.
Nice.
And David, yes, he did. He worked on the music, and, you know, and David used Cambodian instruments.
Nice.
Yeah, to compose that music, and
wow.
He doesn't even play Khmer instruments.
Wow, that's awesome.
But, yeah, I wanted to bring in Cambodian sound,
mm-hmm.
you know, the sounds of Khmer instruments.
Yes.
But at the same time, use it in a way that's not traditional,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I felt that the lives, you know, the people are changing.
Yes.
And I think that the music should reflect, you know, that change.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And your film can take home another prize from the San Francisco International Film Festival because you are a Golden Gate Award documentary feature contender. So.
Yes. We'll see. Cross our fingers.
Yeah. So are you going to be here for April 27th, April 29th, and May 5th, all the screenings?
Yes.
Okay.
So we have a screening on April 27th, which is actually sold out.
Oh, good for you.
But people can still line up for rush tickets.
Okay, what about the 29th?
People can still line up for a rush ticket. 29th is still available.
Okay, I'm going to get my ticket for
Berkeley.
That one. Okay.
And then May 5th, that's still open.
Okay.
Yeah. So if people want to go online and check out for advance tickets, they can check it out and purchase a ticket.
Mm-hmm.
Highly encourage everyone to come.
Yeah.
It's going to be a great festival. I'm really excited. And, you know, just like all the festivals that we've been part of, I just feel really thrilled to be part of a community of, you know, so many wonderful films right now. There's so many great films. You know, if we didn't win a prize, I would totally be fine with it, because everyone else, you know, completely deserves the prize. You know, all the films that I've seen have been spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and many of the documentaries I've seen have been told, you know, from the human perspective, you know, have been told by people themselves. And it's just so wonderful, you know, that there's so many great documentaries out there right now, and so many great documentaries to choose from.
So,
I highly encourage everyone to, only comes and see River Changes Course, but every other film, you know, that is playing at San Francisco right now, it's going to be a great documentary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, congratulations on A River Changes Course and all your other films that you've made and the ones to come.
Thank you.
Yeah, before the meeting, I'm going to come to the screening on the 29th, so I've got to get my ticket.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect. That would be great. I'd love to see you there.
Okay, well, thank you again for such a wonderful conversation. Looking forward to the talk with the audience after the screening, because that's always really wonderful as well. And we have a large Cambodian community here in the San Francisco Bay Area, so
it should be
really cool seeing people, talking to you about the land and the places, because they actually know these places intimately.
Yeah, no, it's
really
true.
Mm-hmm.
It's really true. You know, I just want to add very quickly that I think it's important for people to view the film not just as a film about Cambodia, because it is a film about Cambodia, but what I really wanted to reveal in the film, you know, was that this is not just happening in Cambodia, and it's happening all over the world. You know, this is just, you know, one situation. But I think the impact of, you know, globalization is being felt everywhere. You know, whether it's from deforestation, you know, and the removal of indigenous people, you know, the extinction of our forests, the extinction of our plants and animals, to, you know, climate change and global warming. I think it's, you know, it's being felt all over the world. So I hope that when people view it, that they can, you know, that they will want to view it not just as a film about Cambodia, which is wonderful and great. I love that. Especially when people are traveling to Cambodia, they want to see a, you know, film before they leave. That's also good too. But yeah, I think it's important to know that this film, I think, is universal in many respects.
I think that's really, really clear that it's not just over there, it's here too.
I immediately
thought about Haiti when I saw the floating cities.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay. And then and then I think about Nigeria.
And
there's actually an architect who is looking at the future and seeing where there won't be, you know, you won't be able to live on the land. And so he has these cities that are just on water. And there is, so I went online. I think it was a Harvard project, and he has he's done projections, drawings of this particular type of new kind of living that we might have to sort of seriously consider the melting of the ice caps and shrinking land mass and things like that. So, it is so with us. You know, it's not over there. The river changes course.
Yeah.
All of our rivers, we need to think about our rivers and how, you know, we need to stay the course, because we might not want to change the course necessarily, so we need to stop, you know, with the overconsumption and, not respecting our planet and what the life that lives on it and what that means for our lives if we continue to let this mass consumption, you know, erase whole ecosystems. Yeah. You do a really good job. Oh, yeah. I mean, if we're a thinking audience, we will certainly get it.
But, yeah, I mean, you mentioned Haiti. I was in Haiti last year.
Oh, okay.
And this is exactly, you know, we were able to draw so many parallels between Haiti and Cambodia.
Yeah.
It was astonishing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it was very much the same things that are happening.
Yeah, unfortunately. Yeah. Well, thank you again. My class is waiting for me. I need to go.
Okay. Thank you, Wanda.
All right. You take good care. Safe travel.
Okay. You too. Right. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.